Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, can even be the great debate, but not without you. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls, your SMS, your emails, and even your tweets. The details are up here on the screen now. Here's the phone number, 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero. You can SMS the show on 44780008066. Email us at comment@presstv.co.uk or tweet us at comment_PressTV. And the best of the SMS, emails and tweets will come up here on the comment wall if they're good enough. We've got two questions tonight. The first is the Syrian war finally coming to an end? And the second is, should David Cameron be prosecuted for war crimes in Libya? I'll talk about Libya later, but before I give you my opinion on the significance of the recent events in Syria, where a ceasefire is now in place, here's a reminder about what has been happening in Syria this week.
There's been a significant drop in violence in Syria after a week-long ceasefire brokered by Russia and the United States came into force on Monday. Relative calm appears to have prevailed across Hama, Latakia, Aleppo and Idlib, with only some allegations of sporadic and isolated incidents, according to the UN. For its part, Damascus has reported a series of violations by militants in different parts of the country, as have the Russian Defense Ministry. On the other hand, militants say the Syrian government is blocking aid convoys to besieged cities in clear breach of the ceasefire agreement. The deal calls for increased humanitarian aid for those trapped inside Aleppo. Russia and America would then launch joint airstrikes and pound the positions of terrorist groups such as ISIL and Jabhat Fateh al-Sham. Over the past few months, foreign-backed militants have suffered major setbacks as the Syrian army has managed to recapture several areas. It's estimated that between 300 and 400,000 people have been killed in the conflict in Syria so far.
Well, I think that package just about summed up the scale of the devastation, the disaster, which has been visited on the people of Syria. Hundreds of thousands dead, millions of people displaced, foreign jihadis everywhere, cutting off people's heads and slaughtering them and videoing themselves for the purposes of the entertainment of what they imagine to be their public across the world. None of which is to say that the government in Damascus was what it should have been. None of this is to say that before this conflict, Syria was run in a democratic and pluralistic way. That would be untrue. None of this is to say that the regime in Syria did not make many, many mistakes in the early part of the conflict. However, whatever the problems in Syria, a foreign jihadi invasion of hundreds of thousands of headcutters and heart eaters flying the black flags of Al-Qaeda and even worse of ISIS is not the answer. It's not the answer for Syria, for the region, for the Muslims, or for the wider world. That's why I always say, and I say it again now as the war might be coming to an end, I'm not with the Syrian regime. I'm just against their enemies. And I believe their enemies have to be defeated on the battlefield as a necessary but not sufficient condition. A necessary condition but not sufficient, because the conditions which grew the horror story that is Al-Qaeda, ISIS, continue to exist. I believe the ceasefire will broadly halt, and I believe the political process negotiated between the Russian and United States leadership will begin to open the way to a political solution to the conflict. The Syrian government is satisfied with it, as are the Russians, the Iranians, and Hezbollah, and the Iraqi militias that have been providing defense strength around holy places in Syria. So, if all the people who are fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda are satisfied with the deal that has been struck, then I see no reason myself to doubt it. Although there are some who do, I see them on Twitter claiming that Russia has somehow sold out the Syrian people, sold out to the United States. I don't buy that at all. Let's hear from an expert witness, Amar Waqaf, who is a Syrian nationalist in London. He's been on the show before, and he was well worth hearing. Amar, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Is the war finally coming to an end in your view?
Not yet, I would say. Even though the recent agreement between the United States and Russia is a significant step forward, hopefully this would open the way for more building of bridges of trust in a sort of way, and between the two powers, and also between the regional powers, Turkey, Syria, and so on. So that may pave the way for, a more speedy solution, but it's still a bit far away, unfortunately.
In what sense has the shift in Turkish policy towards Syria played a part in this? Turkey, of course, was the open doorway for ISIS and Al-Qaeda. It seems that doorway has now been shut. And after almost 5 years of covert cooperation between the Erdogan government and the fanatic extremists, including foreign ones, including foreign fanatics from here who've been crossing the border, it seems now that Turkey is up for the fight against them.
Also not necessarily we would look at it from a different point of view. The Turkish main concern, I mean, they made a gamble with either proactively or passively supporting ISIS, Daesh, in order to put more pressure on the government in Damascus. But meanwhile, they've noticed with a lot of worry that the United States is propping up the Kurdish nationalists in northeastern Syria, and apparently the United States view them as a strategic partner 10 or 20 years later. And that has, made a lot of concern in Ankara. And so with Daesh or ISIS now ripe for harvest, they cannot see that they can maintain their position, and they would want to enter in the fight against Daesh in order to salvage whatever influence they can and try to curb whatever influence the Kurdish are trying to have. So that said, that triggered this huge U-turn towards Russia, and we need to understand that Russia has put a lot of pressure since its entry into operations in Syria. But that Turkish U-turn and the pressure, or the anticipated pressure against the Kurds, has made the United States also try to salvage whatever influence they have. So they made a proposal to Russia about 6 or 7 weeks ago when Secretary Kerry visited Moscow, and he met with Putin and Lavrov, and they had extended conversations. And apparently the crux of the proposal is that the United States is willing to ditch Jabhat al-Nusra in order to save the other groups, because the way they see it is that if they don't do that, the Russian and Syrian forces will always have whatever legitimacy necessary, signed by the United States Security Council, by the way, to attack wherever Jabhat al-Nusra is. So they would want to salvage, you know, the likes of Ahrar al-Sham, even though they're extremists, but until now they have escaped al-Qaeda designation. But still, they would want to rescue them by ditching and sacrificing Jabhat al-Nusra.
Ammar, thank you very much for kicking off this debate. Ammar Waqaf, a Syrian nationalist in London. Let's stay in London and hear from Mo. Always worth hearing. Mo, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Yes, good to hear. Is the Syrian war coming to an end in your view?
Yeah, well, George, I want to respond to both questions. But yes, like your previous speaker said, there is great hope. But what I think we should be wary of is this agreement between the Russians and the U.S. We've seen this trap before where, if you remember with the Libyan war, UN Security Council Resolution 1973, where China and Russia abstained. But that was a trap for regime change. You know, that was the basis.
It was the most expensive abstentions of the 21st century so far.
Exactly. Well, but you know, previous to Russia, the USSR walked out of the Security Council before the Korean Resolution.
Yes, indeed.
If you remember.
Indeed, I do. I was alive at the time, but I do.
Yeah, fair point. But Russia seems to be walking into these traps with the U.S. because the U.S. is not going to do as it says. And what's going to happen here is hopefully, as your previous speaker again has said, this is the final days of the conflict, but it's not the final or the end of the problems for Syria because, remember, the U.S., the U.K. and France have accused President Assad of chemical and biological weapon attacks, which they have no proof of. So what they're doing now is maybe the war will come to an end, sort of, but they're still going to target Assad and his government. So that is the real danger here. And I think Russia needs to be really wary of these agreements. And I think they probably are. But going to the Libya,
I think more that they've learned a very big lesson from the Libyan disaster, about which we'll talk in the second half. And I think China has too. I don't believe that either will be fooled again. You know the old saw, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Mo in London, thanks for the call. Bani is in Switzerland. Let's hear from him. Bani, welcome.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Don't miss
you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Good evening, Mr. Galloway. Salam alaikum to all of you.
Alaikum salam. Good evening to you.
I apologize with all these noise. In one second, I'm 100% with you.
Okay.
I live in Geneva, as you know.
Yes.
And there's a lot of happening here always because of these big decision makers are coming here to find a way to stop feeding the injustice. Now, about this peace that you're talking about, I'm wondering, I'm nobody here that I would have a proper opinion in this matter, but how can we trust the devil or the peace? I mean, already today, 6-7 times they broke this, what they have agreed in Geneva, both Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia and USA. I think we have to learn from the Jewish, the Zionism, with their organization, how they could protect themselves and make this continuation of film like Hollywood of Holocaust and the rest of it. We should find the same way to find all these people in front of the court while they are already here, not in next century, and stop feeding the injustice. We have all these princes passing by in Geneva, living 2-3 months in the hotels. They're all related to those transfers and creating Wahhabi system. Why none of us, on the name of the one ONG, comes and open a file against them and stop and start making worldwide denunciation?
Well, look, I think it's entirely correct to pursue the people responsible for the Holocaust, even if they're 90 or more years old.
Absolutely.
They should face justice. And I take your point about the people who have never faced justice for the crimes that they have committed. But nonetheless, this long in the oven discussion between Lavrov and Kerry has produced something that looks like it could stick. It provides for a temporary ceasefire and relief for the people who have suffered so badly in the siege of the cities. It isolates the two most extreme. Of course, there are still other extremists. It isolates the two most extreme forces and commits both the United States and Russia and, of course, the Syrian army to continue to attack them and defeat them on the battlefield. And it opens up the possibility of a pathway, at least, to a political solution. So whilst I'd love to follow the Jewish path, as you say, of pursuing until the last moment of their lives those responsible for the genocide of the Holocaust, I think that in the Syrian case, for now, we should settle for supporting the agreement. After all, as I said, if the deal is good enough for the government in Damascus, for the government in Tehran, for the Lebanese resistance, and the other resistance forces supporting the Syrian army in this conflict, if it's good enough for all of those, it's good enough for me. Thanks for the call. Here's Robert in Peterhead. The wisest young men come from the north of Scotland. Go ahead, Robert.
Evening, George.
Good evening to you.
So, I'm hoping that the agreement that's been reached in about Syria recently is actually a massive step in achieving peace in Syria, because it's long overdue. I mean, 100,000 people dead, millions made refugees, houses and cities completely flattened, head choppings, heart eatings, shootings. The list is endless of the catalogue of bestial atrocities that have happened during this war.
Look at this, Robert. Look. Aleppo was the jewel of the Orient. You know that?
It was. It was. I saw pictures of Aleppo before the war, and it was beautiful.
Look at this. It's like Berlin in 1945.
Exactly. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And it's been completely destroyed by half a decade of total war in the region that's essentially set off fires all around the Middle East.
Yeah.
Lebanon, you've got sectarian violence in Tripoli, and in some of the even more extreme areas of Tripoli, you've got people with ISIS flags, flying ISIS flags in their neighborhoods. And in Iraq, you've got car bombings almost daily, killing hundreds
There's
of people.
There's another big explosion this evening, killing dozens of people.
Exactly. And these stories never seem to get picked up in Western media, even though there are kids and elderly people and disabled people being murdered in these bomb blasts. So, quite honestly, I'm happy that something, an agreement of peace, has been reached for at least for now, and I hope that it can continue in the near future, because the whole conflict in Ukraine has very much died down. It hasn't become as violent as it used to be. So I'm hoping that a similar situation can happen in Syria, and we can, and the Americans and the Russians, even though I don't support any of the interventions into Syria, the airstrikes on civilian populations, I don't support any of that, but I hope that all the players around the table and in the global Middle East can actually come together and find a solution to this conflict, because it's claimed far too many lives already.
Robert, very well said. Amin is in Sierra Leone. Amin, welcome.
Yes, in connection with the Syrian conflict, it's a very good issue on agreeing on a ceasefire to end the conflict. The ordinary civilians are the ones to suffer to pay the heavy price on a daily basis. No one has to win or no one has to lose when it comes to war. Everything that war brings is total destruction, destruction of life and property. It is the profit of those supporting the terrorists that will surely win, but the innocent lives that are gone will never come again. And the second part of the the conversation, should David Cameron be prosecuted or not? My personal belief for the entire world to be at peace, we should get a body that allows no country or leader to do what it feels to do for its benefit without the full support of that body. This body should comprise of all nationalities, irrespective of any, and work with clear mind in the name of peace. This might make the world a peaceful place to live.
Amin, very well said. We'll come on to Libya. David Cameron has just announced he's leaving British politics. That won't put him beyond the reach of the law. If we had a law, if we had an institution like the one that you have just advocated. Thanks very much for the call. From Sierra Leone, let's go to Canada now and talk to our old friend, Al Mabrouk. Al, welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening, sir.
And welcome to Canada, because I know that you are coming to Canada.
Well, I hope so. I haven't got my visa yet. I've been waiting 3 weeks.
Well, I hope it goes all right.
I hope you can put some pressure on them from there. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I think we should. And I want to actually ask you if you could come to Toronto, to not only Vancouver, because you have some friends in Toronto.
I do. No, not this time. It'll have to just be Vancouver. Anyway, go ahead quickly.
Okay. Now, there is one thing I want to say about Canada before we go and talk about the International Court of Justice and what should be done about the recent war. Now, Canada have a historical history to be a very peaceful country. From the time of Wilfrid Laurier, probably people internationally wouldn't know these names, but Wilfrid Laurier was a very peaceful man, a prime minister, one of the first prime minister of Canada, who said that Canada will show some big nations about peace, tolerance, and coexistence. And Diffin Baker, another prime minister, great one, who fought hard against the Cold War, and he fought hard not to deploy nuclear weapons in Canadian soil. To Lester Pearson, who was the first to send peacekeeping force to Egypt and Cyprus. Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who dampened the heat of the Cold War, visited China, visited Cuba, and tried to lubricate the relation between the West and the East for a peaceful things.
So what's your take on Syria? Is it going to work or not, Al?
Well, sadly, I don't trust very much about what's going on in Syria. I believe that it's better now, and any step, that's positive step, that's step forward. We take it, obviously, but we have to be careful. We are sitting. But there is another thing about the International Court of Justice or International Criminal Court. I hope that people who created a war with no reason or after lies, these people should go to the court. We have to have clearance that everybody is will be prosecuted if they made the mistake, not only the African president.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And, of course, the dog which hasn't barked in this picture is the Persian Gulf Arab satrapies, who have been pouring money and material and in some cases men into the maw of the Syrian war. Are they going to do what the United States tells them to do, or are they going to pursue, at least in part, semi-detached, a kind of freelance foreign policy? We'll no doubt continue to discuss that in the second half of the show, where I'm going to concentrate on the Libyan question. But of course, these two questions are not separate. Short news bulletin, just 3 minutes. God willing, I'll still be here when you get back. You're watching Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're asking, will the decisions made between John Kerry and Sergei Lavrov on behalf of the US and the Russian governments finally bring the Syrian war to an end? And should David Cameron be prosecuted for war crimes in Libya? David Cameron just bowed out of the British Parliament unexpectedly and very, very swiftly, and in contradistinction to what he promised just a few weeks ago. And the Foreign Affairs Select Committee had a thing or two to say about the Libyan war. Here's a reminder of what David Cameron had to say and the promises he made to the Libyan people in September 2012, when he and President Sarkozy supposedly helped to liberate Libya.
Thank you. Thank you. It is great to be here in free Benghazi and in free Libya. Your city was an inspiration to the world as you threw off a dictator and chose freedom. People in Britain salute your courage, and while we are proud of the role that we played to help, we know this was your revolution from your bravery, from people in Benghazi, people in Tripoli, people in Zlitan, people in Brega, people in Misrata. You showed the world you would get rid of a dictator and you would choose freedom.
Well, that was 5 years ago. Of course, there isn't any country called Libya anymore. Libya is several Libyas, all of them controlled by armed militia of one kind or another, some fanatic religiously, some fanatic tribally, all of them killing each other in very substantial numbers. The one thing you can be certain of, there's no democracy, liberty or freedom in Libya. And that which David Cameron was hailing there from the platform in Benghazi turned out to be a desert mirage. Now, the Foreign Affairs Select Committee has damned the war in Libya, damned it as unnecessary, damned it as ill-conceived, and laid the groundwork for a potential prosecution of David Cameron in this country, and who knows, Sarkozy in France, because both of those leaders fooled their public, fooled them into believing that only a NATO bombardment followed by regime change in Libya could save a population in Benghazi which they claimed was about to be massacred, but which the Foreign Affairs Select Committee has found to be a baseless allegation. And moreover, no one paid any attention to the actual character of those rising up in Libya against the dictator Gaddafi. I never met Gaddafi or any member of his family. I had nothing to do with the regime in Libya. But I'll tell you something, only someone who was certifiably mentally ill could now claim that Libya 5 years later is better than it was before Cameron and Sarkozy began the destruction of Libya. And not just for the Libyans, but for the whole of the North African Mediterranean coast. And not just for them, because the destruction of Libya has blown open a door for mass, illegal and highly dangerous immigration from the North African coast to Europe. Thousands of people have been lost in the water of the Mediterranean, because there is no Libyan state anymore, thanks to David Cameron. Now, he just quit Parliament and run off He told us when he gave up as British Prime Minister that he would be continuing as an MP. That turned out to be false, just like it turned out to be false when he said that he would continue as Prime Minister even if he lost the EU referendum. Is David Cameron the new Tony Blair? Well, not if I can help it. I'm hoping to make a movie about Cameron and Sarkozy and the destruction of Libya. Watch this space on that. Let's go to Birmingham. Rizwan's been waiting patiently. Rizwan, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam.
First, I want to talk about Syria. I sincerely believe that the war is not going to be over. And I think between the US and Russia, the talks, I don't think there's going to be anything out of it. If we can't bring stability in Palestine, how are we going to bring it in Syria? You know, the war could be stopped for months, weeks, months, or years. But how do we know it's not going to come back? A lot of lives have been lost. And I think war, eventually, in another war comes, more lives would be lost. So what peace are you going to bring to Syria when so much people have lost their lives innocent?
Well, as I think I tried to say earlier in the show, defeating ISIS and Al-Qaeda is a necessary but not sufficient condition. If we just defeat on the battlefield Al-Qaeda and ISIS, which we must do, if we leave it at that and everything goes back to the status quo ante, then it won't be long before this particular phenomenon, evil in the extreme, morphs into something else. Let's go to Chris Nynam, my old friend of the Stop the War Coalition in London. Chris, should David Cameron be prosecuted for war crimes over Libya?
Well, I think one of the things that's so interesting about the whole discussion, which actually wasn't even mentioned by the parliamentary report, which is quite damning, was that, you know, if it morphed into a war for regime change, therefore it morphed into an illegal war. Yeah. So absolutely there is a case to say that, you know, this was a war crime. They pursued Gaddafi right into the end. They killed Gaddafi. It caused an absolute catastrophe in terms of the situation on the ground. But yes, war for regime change is illegal under international law. And the UN resolution that they claim covered the action actually talks about protecting Libyan civilians and nothing else. So, I mean, there's a case to answer.
Now, quite apart from that, it has been a thoroughgoing political disaster, hasn't it? We've got ISIS in control of one part of the coast. We've got one government in Benghazi, another government in Tripoli, another government in the west of the country. And that's only four. There might be more. What do you say, Chris?
Well, absolutely. I mean, as you said before, it's not a country at all anymore. It's been, it's a failed state. It's an area in meltdown. And one of the things that is so alarming and so worrying about this situation is that even the report draws the conclusion that the West needs to intervene more. The West, it says, needs to back up the GNA government, which is actually laughingly called a government of national accord, but is actually one faction amongst three or four that are vying for control of a bitterly divided country. The idea that given the catastrophe caused by the operation in 2011, that what we need is more Western intervention is, it's a form of madness, really. It's repeating the same mistake again and again and again. And one of the things that we in the Stop the War Coalition are absolutely calling for is people need to draw lessons from these catastrophes. It's not enough in hindsight just to say, oh, that went very wrong. The question is, what went wrong and why? And the reason why it went belly up is essentially because, you know, the idea that Western interventions are going to solve the problems of these countries is simply wrong.
It is, but the political class and their media echo chamber seem to have, I mean, even for me, an astounding ability to bounce back with the same false prospectus for improving things. I was watching Sky News the other day, Chris, which played a big part, you know, in bouncing the British people behind the Cameron War in Libya. They report the Select Committee's damning indictment of the Cameron War, but without a hint of embarrassment, and now claim that, well, it's all about hindsight. How many of these disasters do we have to experience until these people have got some foresight?
No, absolutely, absolutely. This is the question. And, you know, I mean, I think we need to draw some encouragement from the fact that if you look not so much at the elite media, but if you look at opinion polls, huge numbers of people, most often majorities, have actually learned the lessons from the last 15 years. And, you know, one aspect of that is to begin to be a bit cynical and suspicious about what the real motives are and to look behind the kind of humanitarian rhetoric, just as we did, you and all of us back in 2002-03, where people recognized that that war in Iraq was not really about Saddam Hussein. It was a war for oil. And one of the things about the Libyan escapade is that, you know, actually Libya is a huge source of oil, a huge source of gas. It's the biggest gas producer in Africa. It's the nearest source of oil to Europe, actually. And I think we need to rekindle some of that skepticism and get people to understand that, you know, Sarkozy, Cameron, to some extent the Americans, the Germans, the Italians, there's an element of a scramble for Africa here where they're trying to control the resources once again. And when we get that message out, I think that chimes with people.
Now, Chris, here's a quiz question. Only 12 members of parliament voted against the Libyan war. I was not in parliament at the time. Who was the leader of that gallant 12?
That, you may have caught me out there, but it might
Jeremy Corbyn.
Be a certain, it might be a certain leader of the opposition. And
it is. Jeremy Corbyn would have saved us from the disaster of Helmand province, from the disaster of the Iraq war, and from the disaster of the Libyan war, and from the disaster in Syria. If only he'd been the Prime Minister all along.
No, absolutely. And this is why it's so important to back him. And why it's so important that actually Jeremy has stood his ground and taken positions of principle on NATO, on Trident, on Syria. You know, it's very, very impressive despite all the pressure he's doing that. And we've got to back him up and not in any way dodge these arguments, you know, not duck and dive, but say he represents majority opinion in Britain. He represents common sense.
Absolutely. And, Chris Nainham of the Stop the War Coalition, you talked about the scramble for Africa. We better go to Africa now, Ethiopia, where Teddy awaits. Teddy, go ahead. Teddy, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, sir. I'm listening to you, sir.
Okay, go ahead. What would you like to say?
Yeah. I do believe that he needs to be prosecuted because no one is above the law. Because according to international criminal law, I think people, individuals who are involved in crimes like war crimes, crimes against humanity or genocide, they can be held for criminal liability. Not only that, even people who are involved in investigating or planning or assisting commission of such crimes are always subject to prosecution. So being a British Prime Minister or President of the United States or Russia does not make him an exception.
No, it would not. And does Chris Nainham from Stop the War just said, if this war did become a war of regime change, it was ipso facto illegal, because regime change by foreign countries is an illegal act, Teddy.
No, sir, I'm not saying that he's a criminal or not. It's up to the court to decide. That would be unfair.
But well, that's jolly civilized of you. I'm going to say he's a criminal. Thanks very much for the call, though. Farouk is in London. Should Cameron be prosecuted, Farouk?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you've got a bit of Tony Blair here. they knew what they were going to do there. They supply, they continue. It's a mess. It's a complete mess. And they tried to see the same for Syria, and we know all the sufferings, you know. Human beings and men, women and children being killed on a daily basis, some hundreds of thousands of them. That cannot be right. Something has to be done. You know, if it is going to be peace in Syria, I myself, I don't know. I just hope and pray. Because so many regional players and players in it, you know, the proxies and what have you, arming one group against the other, whatever it is, one can only hope, you know, probably we are going down the road of peace.
These pictures are pictures of hubris, pictures of arrogant men who assume they can swagger around the world, changing maps, changing regimes. And look what they bring us in their wake. Farouk, thanks for the call. Sure. Let's go to Malta, not so far from Libya, where Mario awaits. Mario, welcome.
Hello, Mr. Galloway.
What do you think, Mario? Should he be prosecuted or not?
Oh, yes, of course they should be. And with them, it should be, what the other guy's name? The labor with them. Two of them, Sarkozy, Cameron, and Tony Blair. There should be all of them. God, they all created this war, and America should learn something about these things. It's got plenty of people, dead children, being crazy as young as they are. What's war it is by selling all those armaments so they can make another armaments, new armaments, and they will go after North Korea or something like that. And they make sanctions everywhere in the world. Who's going to make sanctions for the United States of America?
Oh, well.
This is America.
That's a bigger question. Mario, right. Thanks for that call. Right. Let's go.
I hope God, wait a minute. Come out, this guy in labor, what's his name? Jeremy Corbyn.
Yes.
I hope he will win the election.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We all do. Thanks, Mario, in Malta. Let's go to Reza in Miami. Reza, go ahead.
George, thank you for a great show.
Thanks.
Regarding your first question concerning the Syria, I don't understand why the resistance forces and the Russian and Syrian, that every time they make a great progress and they corner all these ISILs and the rest of Western-backed terrorists, they fall into this trap of ceasefire and they follow this game again. And second, concerning the what's happening in Libya and David Cameron. Whatever happening in the Arab world, blame it on the Arab world for the lack of courage, lack of self-respect, and lack of self-resistance. Every Arab, always they have to worship and attend blue eyes and blonde hair in order to be recognized. As long as these people, they don't stand up like the people in Iran is standing up for themselves, they be untouchable. So blame it on Arabs. And no one going to prosecute Cameron or Bush or Obama because they are the one they are ruling.
Imagine well, don't be so fatalistic, Reza. As you know, as someone of Iranian extraction, all can change utterly. And sometimes there are decades when nothing happens. But sometimes there are weeks when decades happen. Don't forget that. Let's go to South Wales and hear from Mohammed. Mohammed, welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you, George. How are you?
Alaikum salam. I'm good, thanks. Good. Go ahead.
Good. Nice to hear your voice again.
And you, sir.
Right. Well, what it is, David Cameron and Tony Blair and Bush and also Sarkozy for France, they should be all prosecuted, right? Because, I mean, they went under the false pretenses like Bush and Tony Blair. And,
yeah, they did,
Iraq.
You know. In Libya, they are guilty of the same crime of exactly. Of lying and to their own people and lying to the international order.
The thing is this, what is international order? International order is run by America, Britain, Europe. Right, okay? There's no international order. The order, they make it whenever it suits them. Whatever rules and regulation, UN is controlled by Zionists. UN is controlled by Zionists. with that powerful lobby, and also America is controlled by Zionists. So therefore, we have to have a look at the roots, right? They want the Muslim Ummah to be divided in small 20, 50, 100 states, right, where they can fight amongst themselves, they can sit back, control their oil. Look at what Saudi Arabia is doing, right? They are denying other people for Hajj this year, which they have done, you know?
Well, that's a very big crime, of course, but it's the least of the crimes that the Saudi regime are involved in Yemen, in Bahrain, in Syria, and in spreading their ideology of hate across the world. Mohammed, thanks for that call. Last call is David in London. David, welcome.
Thank you, George. I'm inclined to agree with you that it's possibly the last phase of this imperialist war, as far as Syria is concerned, where the Russians have come out of this as a lower power. The Americans thought they could just ignore them, and they've found out that that's
well, they
the
know
case.
Differently now, David.
They certainly do. But also, I think, like I say, it's just a phase. I think you see what's happening in Yemen at the moment. You see what's happening, obviously, continuously with Iraq and so on. It's this constant war that the Americans, the British, and the EU, Europe, wanted is still there. And you know, it'll go to somewhere else. They'll cause some
no, you're right. It is remarkable, isn't it, David, how Western politicians continue to think that invading and occupying countries in the Middle East is going to make the world more stable.
Shocking. And as far as Cameron's concerned, of course he should be tried. If only we can. The only thing I could say is they're having another thing about Orgreave, and we had the Hillsborough 20 years down the line, 30 years down the line. If we keep going at them, we'll eventually get them in the end, even if it takes a long time.
And he's quite young. I mean, we've got time on our side in pursuing David Cameron. And as I say, I intend to make a movie, if I can, dealing with it. Thanks very much for that call and for all the calls. We dealt with Syria. We dealt with the ceasefire and the political process that could flow from this ceasefire and stop the flow of blood on the streets of Syria. And we dealt with Libya 5 years on from the Sarkozy-Cameron disaster that has cost so many lives. Continue this on Twitter, comment_PressTV.
Hello, just comment your name and the number. And just make sure the your television volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can directly put through this phone number and then we'll call you back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?
Okay, so I'll send you a comment after this.